This is Anthony Anarino, and you're listening to In the Arena.
Step into the arena.
We're back in the arena, this time with David Bradford, the CEO of HireVue. And David's a hard guy to introduce, but I will tell you, if you want to understand networking and the power of networking, David's story is the story for you to read, and Up Your Game is the book for you to read. I brought him in the arena after getting a copy of his book because I want you to listen to him talk about some of the timeless principles that he writes about in Up Your Game, particularly about how he uses the tools like LinkedIn and some of the tools that I use, like Contactually, to maintain and manage these relationships and how he takes action. You're going to love this. Here we go, in the arena with David Bradford. Okay, I'm going to start off with the tough questions first. How old were you in 1955?
I was five.
You were five. Okay, that was like almost 60 years ago. Yes. So you're 65-ish right now.
Ish, right.
Give or take. And I say this for an important reason, because as we talk about these principles in your book, I want to talk about how young people perceive social media and how somebody who's an operator perceives social media and some of the tools that you've used and how these principles have given you a foundation for success. And the book is called Up Your Game, Six Timeless Principles for Networking Your Way to the Top, right?
Correct.
Okay. And I've read a good part of it and I love it. So I often think that for a lot of people who start out with nothing and have, you know, what we would consider a disadvantaged upbringing from the very start, which you did, and we won't tell them about the bottle cap story. We'll just tell them they have to go read it. It's almost an advantage because your UP principle, you know, starts with this idea of starting up and taking action. And I guess I just want to ask you to speak about how your childhood and not having anything shaped these principles around action, about these principles we're about to discuss.
You know, despite the tough upbringing and what I don't point out in the book, we had a failed business in Montana after leaving Burbank, California, and I lived in the basement of our house, and it was a coal stoker that I had to fill every morning, every night. I remember at my 10-year high school reunion going back, and a young lady said, "David, the thing I remember about you is you smelled like sulfur all the time." Now, you know, that tore up my heart because I had to live in this basement because there were seven kids and I had to find a place to sleep, right? And so times were tough, but I'll tell you what, my mom never made it seem that way. My mom, Kay Bradford, 90 years old to this day, and she still wakes up every day and says, "This is going to be the greatest day of my life." And so I think she imbued in me this enthusiasm for action and for life. I tell people that it's better to make a good decision today than a perfect decision a month from now. You got to take action.
It's funny. I have the same story. My mom raised four kids by herself. I slept in the basement too. We didn't have coal and sulfur. I wonder if people thought you were the devil when you showed up smelling like fire. Those are the shaping things. And one thing I guess I didn't recognize until I was about 30 years old that I grew up poor. I didn't know because I had love and I had friends and I had enough to eat, even if it was always macaroni and cheese and fish sticks. But you do end up in those situations with a bias for action. You think, "I need to hustle. I need to work. I need to do things."
Right. You know, David and Goliath, Malcolm Gladwell's new book, does a great job at describing that. And I've exchanged some wonderful emails with him regarding his new book. We both grew up in small towns. me in Montana, he in Canada. We both had an enthusiasm for track and field. What people don't know about Malcolm is he once set the Canadian high school record for the mile run. And wow. And so you get to know people at a deeper level, and maybe that's a message that I definitely want to send.
It's interesting. Of course you would know him, because when you connect, you really connect. And we're going to talk about that because I think it's important. And I only pointed at your age because I want young people to know what this connection means and how it's used by operators, people who really understand how this relationship that we have when we network works. So let's start with Neil. How do you pronounce Neil's last name?
Neil Ochiogrosso.
Ochiogrosso. He's with Growth Capital in New York. And
Investor Growth Capital.
You need him. And how do you find him? How do you find him when you need him for your company, HireVue?
Right. So we're out there raising capital. And a couple of years earlier, I'd been CEO of a company called Fusion.io, which made a solid state disk drive for high-end user storage in IT shops. And so I met a guy by the name, another great name, Hilton Von Ziel. And Hilton was the chief research and development guy at Credit Suisse, the big investment bank in New York. And so I took Hilton's card and we exchanged niceties. But then I went back and I put Neil into my database and I categorize everything in my database, right? In my Yahoo and my Gmail and, you know, and I tag people on LinkedIn as, you know, a techie, you know, whatever it might be. New York, he was based in New York. So each one of those categories. So when it came to raise money for HireVue, I sent an email blast out on LinkedIn to all of my contacts in the New York City area. And Hilton Von Ziel of Credit Suisse was one of those. And he says, "Hey, Dave, great to hear from you again. Congratulations on your success at Fusion.io. Looks like you've got another winner on your hands. I want to introduce you to Neil Ochiogrosso of Investor Growth Capital." And a week later, I was in Neil's office in New York, and we raised $20 million.
Okay, this is a $20 million email. But let's talk about this, and because that's what it is. And I want people, especially salespeople listening to this, to understand the process for you. You took his business card, and you saw value in that relationship immediately, a value worth enough to you that you decided to capture it in a database and tag it with information that would allow you to know when and how to create value for that contact, and that it would extend your network and maybe create value for you in the future. Then you were bold enough to say, "I need an introduction to somebody." And right. Then because you had categorized LinkedIn, you were able to say, "I'm looking for somebody to help with this particular problem I have, namely, I need $20 million, which is a relatively significant problem to have, right?
Right.
And somebody raises their hand and says, "You really need to know Neil." And you get the introduction to Neil, which is a warm introduction, what all of us want in sales. But many, because we're afraid to cold call and we're afraid to ask, and because we don't invest in these relationships, and we'll get to the next point about creating value before capturing any, we're not using and leveraging this great network that we built. But you are. Why?
I just believe in the first concept of the book, which is first of all giving with no thought of getting, right? And so if you go to a business conference and your mindset is, "Oh, how can all of these people help me?" That's it. That's the wrong attitude. You need to walk in with the attitude of, "Hey, here's Bob over here. I'm sitting next to him. What's his business problem? What is he trying to accomplish in his business? And what is it that I have or a connection that I might have that can help him bless his life and help elevate what he's trying to accomplish, be it career trajectory or a partnership or whatever it might be?" So you go first with giving with no thought of getting. And I think Hilton sensed that from me from the get-go. And then when I followed up with Hilton via a couple of emails subsequent to our initial meeting at Fusion.io, then the relationship deepened and trust formed. And when trust forms, then everything accelerates.
This is what I write about all the time. It's trust in relationships, and it always has been, and it always will be. Social media doesn't replace trust in relationships. It allows you to build it, provided you're allowed to go with first principle here, which is, I mean, I guess the way to say this, I know a lot of young people, and they're hoping that social media is the answer for them not having to ask anybody for anything ever. They hope that they're going to be so interesting with their tweets that people beat a path to their door. But when we talk about the startup principle, you're actually taking action. And we'll get to the next principle about what you do when you network. I've got a good friend, Chris Brogan. And Chris, when he meets you, will try to figure out who he needs to introduce you to right out of the gate to say, I need to put these two people together because they can create value for one another, or whatever the case may be. But it's really this bias for action that you have is the startup principle.
Yeah. No, I love to act. And we've got to, light a fire under college kids. I remember I spoke on August 24th last year to a group of 350 college students in the south of England. And what I was struck about after that, and we had individual one-on-ones, is I fear that England has lost its entrepreneurial spirit. And therefore, there's not a bias for action. These kids feel like, oh, if I, get great grades in school and I get this great job and I'm upwardly mobile, then I'm kind of taking advantage of other people. They have, I hate to say it, kind of a socialist mindset that everybody should be equal. And I don't find that in America anymore. I find this great entrepreneurial spirit among college students, but they just don't know how to form those deep relationships. And they, you said it best, Anthony, when you said that, hey, if they tweet enough, if they're out there on Facebook enough and hold themselves as a domain expert, then people will beat a path to their door. It doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't. Let's dig into the next principle in the book. And I want to talk, I guess we're still in startup, but You create value before you capture value. And it's that mindset and it's what's in your heart that you go out and you seek to create value for other people that makes it easy for people to create value for you and easy for you to capture value. And so many people get this backwards. They do go into the idea of how can somebody help me get what I want? And they betray themselves with their intentions. So I want to ask you a couple really technical kind of questions. How do you start giving and what do you give? And I'll frame this up for you, maybe make this even an underhanded softball pitch right over the plate. I want to talk about emotional capital because I believe it's overlooked and underappreciated as what human beings can do to create value for other human beings.
You know, about 2 years ago, I got a LinkedIn email from a guy I hadn't seen in 15 years. We'd connected, we'd stayed in touch on LinkedIn. He sends me this kind of emotional email, which was, or in-mail, I guess, on LinkedIn that said, hey, Dave, I've lost my job. I met you when Novell acquired WordPerfect. I was in sales, et cetera. Can I take you to lunch and, you know, hit you up and find out, you know, maybe you have a contact or two for me in the IT industry. I need a job, right? I've got five kids, et cetera. And so that captured me emotionally. And so, you know, I had 1,000 things going at the time, but I said, hey, what the heck? I'll go to lunch with the guy, et cetera. I got to eat lunch anyway, whatever. We go to lunch. We have a nice lunch. I write down the names of four CEOs that he can contact. The good news is for him, he actually contacted one of them and got a job. So that was great. So now I'm walking out of the lunch and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I got to go do this. I got to do that. And he stopped me and he said, Dave, what is it that I can do for you? And I says, oh, don't worry about it, Todd. Not a big deal. I was happy to do it. I wish you the best. I walk about three more steps and to his credit, Anthony, he grabs me by the shoulders and says, no, what is it that I can do for you? And I said, well, you know, I'm actually working with a guy, Dave Checkitz. He used to be the president of Madison Square Garden and the New York Knicks. And, you know, we're working on raising money for an international sports fund that Dave is driving. I says, you wouldn't happen to know anyone in, you know, that loves sports that's a high net worth individual. And he paused and he says, you know, I might know somebody. Let me make a contact for you and I'll get back to you. I get back to my home where I'm sitting now, about 10 minutes from where we ate the lunch. And he emails me and he introduces me to a Saudi prince, Prince Abdullah, who lives in Beverly Hills, California. The next morning, I am in a meeting in the prince's home in Beverly Hills at 11 a.m. The point of this story, I guess, is a numberfold, but I would say that, first of all, I went to that lunch because I wasn't expecting to get anything from it. I was just trying to help a guy out that was having a rough patch in his life. The second point I would make is never underestimate the value of a connection. I think a lot of people go into relationships thinking, oh, this guy's a senior executive and he's going to help me get into HP or IBM or this big company and help me make a sale, et cetera. You never know who anyone might be connected to. So don't underestimate the value of any connection.
I tell people that all the time. They underestimate who somebody's going to be too in the future. They think because they met them at this point in their life, that's who that person is, but they're going to grow and they're going to change. And you don't know. You need to be cognizant that people are valuable wherever they are, however they are.
Right.
And take them for that. I love the emotional capital though, because I think that sometimes, and I'll just share my view on this before I dive into your next rule that we're going to talk about, but just listening, just caring enough to go to lunch with somebody and listen and just hear their story makes a tremendous deposit in that relationship. Whether you do anything for them or not, sometimes just being there and having that presence for somebody is all they really need from you.
Yeah, no, that's a great call.
We underestimate that. You've got excellent stories about showing up. I'm just going to ask you to share a little bit about one of them, and it's Steve Wozniak, because he's so well known. I just want to know how, if you could share the story about how he ended up as your chief scientist when you were at Fusion.io, and what do you think people should take away from the story and this chapter of your book about showing up?
Well, first of all, you've got to understand that the Wozniak story starts with the birth of my 14th grandchild. And I went to the hospital, and this beautiful baby boy came out. He's now 5 years old. And we were thrilled. The doctor came up, gave me a big hug, says, hey, your daughter did great, et cetera. Can I take you to breakfast? I'm going, sure, doc. Yeah, let's go to breakfast. So we went off and we had eggs and ham or something like that. I can't remember. Now, I tell you this is kind of the start of the story because I'm going to get to Wozniak in a second. But understand that there must have been at least 12 different steps that took place between that breakfast with that doctor and meeting Steve Wozniak. But they all led to kind of a game-changing interaction with Woz that helped change the future of a company. So I do this favor and I go to breakfast with the good doctor. He says, I got a son-in-law. He's moving to Utah. He needs clients. Can you go to lunch with him? I said, sure, doc. When do you want me to do that? I go to lunch with his son-in-law and we have a nice lunch. And I says, hey, he's finding, trying to find out how to get clients in Utah. And I said, you know, join some community associations, be visible, et cetera. He does that. He joins the Utah Bar Association. He calls me back about 6 months later and says, hey, I am now chair of the Speakers Bureau at the Utah Bar Association. Would you be one of our keynote speakers at our annual meeting in Sun Valley, Idaho? I'm going, Sun Valley, Idaho? What? Why are you guys meeting up there? Long story short, I agreed to do it. I agreed to drive the 6-hour one-way drive from Provo, Utah to Sun Valley, Idaho. I figure, hey, throw my golf clubs in back. I'll play some golf up there. I'll give my speech, go to the range, hit some balls, and then go play 18 holes of golf in beautiful Sun Valley, Idaho. It was July of 2008. So I drive up there and I'm having, a wonderful conversation with myself. I wind up, give my speech the next morning, and now I'm getting ready to go out. It's about 10 in the morning. I'm getting ready to go over to the driving range. And a young lawyer stops me and starts asking me some questions about my speech. And he said, it was on patent law and this, that, and the other. And so I was responding to that. But then as we were talking, I saw a piano bench and I looked down, and on the piano bench, there was a piece of paper I remember to this day that said, luncheon keynote, Steve Wozniak, inventor of the Apple computer. Now I've got a choice to make, Anthony. I can either go play golf or I can stay and listen to the Woz. Couple of stories from that. So I make this game-changing decision to stay and listen to Woz. But here's what I did. I sat in the front row. There were 500 people in the room. And I happened to sit right next to his executive assistant. We exchanged niceties, et cetera. I asked her a few questions. She says, oh, I'm Woz's executive assistant. He'd love to meet you after his speech. I go, well, that would be fantastic. So we hit it off. I invited him to join the advisory board, and he did. And then when I became CEO of Fusion.io, he became my chief scientist. First paycheck since Apple. So that was a crazy, you know, way and thing to happen. But I'm just telling you all the things and steps that had to happen in the interim. Sit in the front row, show up, follow up, be there, ask questions. I could have sat right next to, you know, his executive assistant and never known who that person was. So anyway, hopefully that helps.
It does. I appreciate that story. And you led us into the last question here, which is regarding the third of your six timeless principles, which is follow up. And I want everybody to go out and buy the book, especially because I believe that the framework that you've delivered here is really, really powerful. If you're young, definitely go buy this book, because this is how to operate. You got to be an operator, and you have to have this sort of bias for action. But I just want you to talk about one piece of follow up, if you don't mind. And that's the follow-up rule. It's the 24-hour rule that you have. What's the 24-hour rule?
Well, basically, if I make a connection, and I yesterday I was at a conference and spoke for a little bit, but, you know, interacted with people, grabbed probably 7 or 8 business cards. And last night before I went to bed, I emailed each of those individuals saying it was nice meeting them, and I'm going to send them a follow-on connection on LinkedIn, right? And it kind of catches people off guard, because people go, oh, man, he's the CEO. He's done all this, that, and the other in his career, and, you know, why would he reach out to me, et cetera? Hey, I love connecting with people. And so I follow up with them within 24 hours. I'm not always 100% faithful to it. Nobody can. But I organize my life so that late at night or early morning, I can get on social media and connect with people on LinkedIn. And, you know, and then I try to personalize it. That's a key to follow up. It's not only important to follow up, but it's how you follow up. So when I meet people at conferences and they want to link in with me, I'm always telling them, hey, tell me, you were sitting in the third row, you wore the yellow shirt, and you asked me about, you know, Walmart or something like that, you know. And so I try to get people to understand that when they reach out, don't just send this, hey, I'd like to be a professional connection of yours on LinkedIn. No, send a personal note that says, hey, we met yesterday. I was in the third row. I wore the yellow shirt. I asked you about Walmart, et cetera. That becomes more personal. People will respond to that personal aspect.
Dave, I connected with you here on this podcast, and I asked you a bunch of questions, and I'm going to send you a LinkedIn invite when we're done here. You'll remember me?
Yes, I will.
I really appreciate you being here. I really appreciate your work. The book is wonderful. I'll put a link to it. I appreciate you coming on here to share this. I believe these are timeless principles. I do believe that salespeople and business people and people with an entrepreneurial mindset are going to benefit tremendously from reading your book. And I let you tell a couple stories, but the last thing I'll say to pitch your book while people are here listening to this is you are a storyteller, and the book is really just story after story after story. And it makes these principles even easier to accept and understand, because you do a great job dragging us through these great and interesting life events with interesting characters. So I really appreciate it. Where do we want to point people to find out more about you?
Well, go to www.davidbradford.com, and you'll see links there to purchase the book. It actually formally comes out next Wednesday. We're kind of driving lots of traffic for Wednesday the 14th. 5/14/14 is the big launch date. So I would appreciate it. And by the way, have them follow my blog. I run into several people every day that says, I read your blog, love your blog. I was playing golf yesterday, of all things, hit a shot into a hole. There was a condo behind the hole. The guy came out of the house, said, hey, you almost made a hole in one. I says, hey, thanks for watching my great shot. Didn't recognize the guy. And he says, by the way, love your blog. It's crazy.
That's it. Well, yeah. Thank you so much for being here. We'll point people at davidbradford.com, and I'll talk to you soon.
You're a great guy, Anthony. Thanks.
He is David Bradford, and you can find him at davidbradford.com. Do pick up Up Your Game. It will be out, I believe, May 15th. It's a wonderful book. I really think there are a lot of lessons to be learned from David's story. I'm Anthony Annarino. You can find me at thesalesblog.com or annarino.com. When you show up there, please sign up for the Sunday newsletter. It's the best work I do each week. And I look forward to seeing you back here next week in the arena.